The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Hello,
the Millennium Express is coming. Choo choo.
Yes, very nice. I think a lot of people like the train. Welcome back to Millennial, and I'm now here with JF Gariepi. JF has been on several times before, I think every year since 2017, if I recall correctly. So I think most people know who he is. So JF, do you want to introduce yourself briefly?
Well, I'm a scientist, I'm a biologist interested at the emergence of life, the author of The Revolutionary Phenotype. I'm on Twitter. I have made all sorts of things in life, monkey research, media, interviews, and I deliver my thoughts on an everyday basis on Odyssey.
All right. And this year has been very full with all sorts of news, geopolitics and so on. I guess the first thing to talk about is the evolution in the Ukraine situation. I think you were always skeptical about the war and the Ukraine defending itself against or going to war with Russia. How do you think that's evolved? Pretty much as you expected?
Exactly. I think what we had in 2023 is basically an absence of anything. And the relationship between Ukraine and the U.S. is like the relationship between an old man and a prostitute, where at first she's enticing him with potential, an impression that perhaps she will fall in love with him, that perhaps she will be useful to him. But eventually it boils down to all this drainage of money, and it's all there is. And eventually the old man finds himself disappointed that he hasn't secured a new lover. He has merely been parasitized. He has merely been drained of his money. And 2023 was the year where what people like me and Coach Red Pitt had been saying has happened, which is Ukraine has demonstrated its absolute inability. No matter how much flow of money would come from the U.S., they have totally crumbled. They have shown an incapacity of even gaining centimeters. The only places that were gained is wherever Russia withdrew, and wherever Russia defended, Ukraine couldn't progress. There were lots of mimetics around the counteroffensive, and Ukraine has been continuing its war on social media rather than in reality. And 2023, therefore, is the year of victory for Russia, the year where if the people on the left were still willing to disappoint themselves, that somehow the LGBT front of Western civilization was progressing eastward. Now they have to face the reality. It won't happen. Their empire is in shambles. And you can't have a corrupt country be the recipient of money and lead a war for you. You have to win wars for yourself at great cost for your people, or you will lose them. And America has shown that you can't purchase a military victory.
Yeah, I think there was a whole thing with America, it being a proxy war for America, America paying for an awful lot of military materiel and support of various kinds. Other European countries doing that as well, it has to be said, including Britain. And also, I think they planned it, I mean, assuming that they actually did think they were going to win this, I think they planned it as the first victory for an LGBT army, let's say, where you've got that tranny, the transgender American-Ukrainian guy. You'll know the one I mean. And he went over there and he's saying Slavy Ukraina. And I think this probably was how they envisaged it. Like, the first war where we'll... The gay LGBT West, tranny West, will be visibly triumphant. It'll be a visible triumph for the Western way as it has come to be defined. And instead, it's been a terrible, terrible mess. And even that transgender ended up, the last time I saw him, it was he was out of makeup. He was back to normal, presumably heading back to his family in America. I don't know.
When the psyop is over, the transgender military returns to his heterosexual self. No, it's fascinating. That's in line with the left's desire to convert institutions into kind of an all-gay or at least all-liberal. Like you have, they want a vision of institution, government, bureaucracy, and the military, and the police and the FBI. They want a vision of this as being overtaken by their force in their kind of view of let's mess with the system, let's mess with these oppressive system that before have oppressed us. Let's be the new fascist, the liberal LGBT fascist. And it's not working at all because you have a very big difference between homosexual populations and LGBT activists and the normie heteros, which is the normie heteros have something to fight for. You take these LGBT people who have no children, no family. They don't really have a reason to fight for. And in fact, their whole life is based around sexual hedonism and sexual identity. You're not going to get the same type of personality there. You're going to end up having a whole bunch of employees that you're paying at a very high price and that you ultimately don't fight with the same fervor as others. And I think we're about to see this in all domains where the liberals have been investing a kind of conquest of these domains, including the academia. You're just about to see people less passionate, less willing to win, and more there to drain the salary, and considering in fact that they are entitled to that salary by laws of equality and equal access.
Well, there's the, as someone said in the live chat, whoever thought that Sarah Ashton Crillo, I think was the name. Whoever thought that that would be a good spokesman, spokesperson for the Ukraine side, was crazy because it makes them, and these are the ones we are supposed to be siding with and identifying with, and it makes them look insane. I mean, I don't know how they thought that was a good idea.
Well, I think they are misevaluating the progression of their win. And the leftists are taking L's after L's in 2023, and that's why it's a very white-pilling year for me, because they are considering that they have taken over the public discourse, and they did to a certain extent. But what they forget is that the people they hate, the white normal majority, the white heterosexual family man, family girl, they are still deeply hesitant at siding with the far left. Although you won't have them complain against them, you won't have them go full white nationalist or alt-right, they are still deep inside not willing to side with the whole craziness of having basically our spokesperson across the Ministry of Health and the military to all be trans and all be pro-gay. It is just too much to ask for the normie mind, and they have misevaluated that. It's not because you shut people down that in their heart they are on your side. You have merely created a system of oppression and of silence, but inside their heart, most people still are feeling a massive hesitation and a massive unwillingness to expose their children to this degeneracy.
Yeah, and of course, there's also this whole bizarre thing with neo-Nazi units in Ukraine siding with this tranny. I mean, what the hell? It's a very difficult thing to get your head around.
Yes. And it has to do with the idea of middle powers and ocean powers. If you will, Russia is an extremity of a continent. And the UK is an extremity of a continent. And Western Europe is an extremity of a continent. But when you have Middle Earth, I know it's a term from Lord of the Ring, but it's really how I think of it. The middle of Europe, when you have movements that rise that are identitarian and nationalist in these more landlocked areas, they will very much be inspired by some form of fascist history. And as it turns out, the people who have strongly defended Ukraine historically were this kind of landlocked, blood and soil associates of fascists, including Hitler. And so they were adoring various movements that were very close to fascists. So you can't disconnect this history. And yet you have a Zelensky who's trying to manage ultimately the imperfect marriage between the Western values and the reality of his country, which is his country is one of the most corrupt. It is the most corrupt white country in the world. It is the most sex trafficking white country in the world. It is one of the highest crime country in the world where there are white people. It's unbelievable that Ukraine here is this in reality. And yet Zelensky has the big contract to basically make it a European or make people feel that it's a European front. It is not. Ukraine is absolutely foreign. It's as foreign as certain countries of Africa to our Western sensibilities. And so this divorce leads to lots of hilarity and lots of impossibility, one of them being Facebook allowing for an instant, allowing posts that promote Nazism, but only if it's in relation to their support of the Ukraine war.
Yeah, things like that were very strange. I think in this way, you see how different Eastern Europe, like that area is from Western Europe and the West generally. You see that they have a very different history. They have a very different conception of World War II and how it played out and who betrayed them in that war. They're not too happy with the likes of the Anglosphere. There are these ancestral resentments. And also that they have a different conception of Nazism and that the Russians have a different conception of Nazism. So when they say we're going to rid Ukraine of Nazis and so on, it doesn't necessarily mean what it sounds like to our ears. It's a whole different thing. It's a whole different history that they're speaking from.
The various angles on Nazism and World War II is so interesting because you realize the Russians consider themselves a people of multicultural liberator, which I, as a Westerner, I'm disgusted by multiculturalism. But from the Russian perception of it, they see themselves as having conquered part of a kind of Muslim world, a kind of not totally Middle Eastern, not totally white world of Asiatic Middle Eastern Muslims. And they see themselves as having, including them in their empire, and as having liberated Germany from the iron fist of fascism. So they see themselves, in a way, they kind of inherit that kind of Jewish story that the Jews would say about America, that we are liberators of Germany. They kind of suffer from the same, but in their case, it hasn't developed into a pathology of civilization, where they are self-denying and where they are importing so much migrants that they eventually disappear. So it's fascinating to see how a different civilization with just a little bit of sensibility about their demographics were able to tell the same narrative without falling for the culprits of it.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Very surprising for us. And another part of this is, and I think we talked about this last year, is that the Ukrainian nationalists, you know, as nationalists, we would be naturally inclined to support them, their fight for their own homeland and so on. But the whole thing is actually playing out. It's one empire versus another empire. It's the West, it's America versus Russia. And Ukraine is just unfortunately, is the thing that they're toying with. It's the football that they're fighting over. I don't like that reality, but I do think it's the reality. And so the Ukrainian nationalists, whichever side they side with, it's not going to be their own interests that they're actually fighting for.
And that's where these kind of violent, angry men that become these nationalists in these locations, they're really just cannon fodder, really. They are taken by any regime because they're the most angry and the most testosterone filled. they end up being easily exploitable by any manager, including, in this particular case, Zelensky, a Jewish manager of this whole thing. And it's so heartbreaking what you mentioned about the uselessness of this war for the Ukrainian, because to bridge a little bit toward the Twitter explosion, which is fascinating in 2023, we can see, because of the liberty on Twitter, we can see so much video from the front lines. And just this week, I saw a video. There's just a bunch of Ukrainian male soldier bodies on the floor. You have this female Ukrainian advancing in the trench, having to step over the dead bodies of Ukrainian, and only to get shot 2-3 feet later. And you wonder, what the heck was the goal of this woman at the front? What was she doing? Was she keeping the Russians from advancing? No, she was merely sent there by the order of some manager of the military who knew nothing about, who didn't care about the risk he was exposing her to. And this is very sensible to a country like America, where our militaries have been doing operations with very little loss most of the time. And when we engage in ground wars, we have way too many loss, and eventually the citizens react and they want their soldiers back in the country. But to see a whole nation send its people to die at bullets of a relatively almost third world army, which is the Russian army, you know, not a first class army of the world, certainly. They are kind of at the intersection between a third world army and a first class army, and only to die at these infinite flows of bullets and artillery that are low cost. It's so sad to see human life wasted in that way.
Someone says what we're saying is ridiculous. The Russians tried to take Kiev. What should the Ukrainians have done? Should they just have rolled over and allowed that to happen? What would you say to that?
What the Ukrainians should have done in 2014 is respect democracy. Respect that they were deeply a people whose fate was tied to the Russian world, and to not deny, out of pure political capriciousness, interactions, links, and association with the Russian in the way they did and with the coup they did. Now, if you go back there and you change history, what I would have changed is I wouldn't have done the coup against Yanukovych. I wouldn't have installed such a European sympathetic power, and I wouldn't have continued the oppression of all Russian parts of Ukraine. I know it's further back in the past than you expected, but this war doesn't start at the Russians driving toward Kyiv. This war starts in 2014, and in fact, a little bit before.
It obviously goes back, and there are parallels with other conflicts in the past where it seems like America has goaded this into happening. There's a whole lot to be said about that. But I don't know if there's... somebody did ask, how long do you give Ukraine before it has to surrender? Because it's worth saying... someone else said, well, Ukraine had a very good 2022. It lost momentum this year. But I don't really think that's not really the point. The point is that it was predictable that it was going to have a bad 2023. Eventually, it was going to run out of power. It was going to run out of bullets. It was going to run out of especially soldiers. That was the whole point from the start. That was why even I, as a complete layman, ignoramus about this stuff, even I thought, it doesn't stand a chance. It cannot possibly win this war.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, what would you say about this?
Well, this war can extend itself into an everlasting war where there is no advance on either side. So the ball is not in the camp of Ukraine right now. Ukraine cannot do anything, and Ukraine is at the mercy of the Russian willingness for advancement. Now, currently, Vladimir Putin has a nice hand because he doesn't have to progress further. Putin has realized the goals that he had stated on paper, which is liberate DPR-LPR. There may be a little bit of friction to handle at the new borders, but basically he's fulfilled the goal that he had stated. Now, that's a very nice place to be sitting on for him. And he doesn't have to further conquer Ukraine, although he could. So basically, it boils down to, is Vladimir Putin having more ambition to really eliminate the Ukraine threat of whatever remaining territory of Ukraine joining NATO or something like this? Or does he feel that he has shamed enough the American side here to demonstrate that the proxies of America are just not efficient enough, even with American intelligence, to combat the war of attrition strategy of the Russian army? So I don't know what he will decide, but certainly it's not in the hands of Zelensky. And in this year, the wife of Zelensky appeared in an interview and she's tired. she is done. You can feel the defeat of the Ukrainian people through her, where she says, well, I hope that me and my husband can move on to something else and that he doesn't have to be president enough for 4 more years. And so the kind of authoritarian martial law regime of Zelensky is threatened from the inside. His own wife wants him out. And that might lead to a change of situation in which Ukraine maybe moves on to a new leader, a leader that accepts, okay, we lost this territory, but now it's over. That could very well be the end, or it could be an everlasting front that really doesn't commit much effort to the war effort.
It seems that the people around Zelensky, not just his wife, but his advisors even, are already off this mind, that it's done. We cannot win. There was a thing, I think it was Time magazine, did a huge feature about a month ago where they had interviews with his close circle. And they were all saying that Zelensky is obsessed and delusional and cannot see the reality. He refuses to see the reality. These were his own allies, his own advisors. So basically talking about him as if he's mentally unhinged. So,
well, you have to be, because first the whole rise of his power is kind of bizarre. He starts as an actor. He's pushed as an actor by these very rich people in Ukraine who want him to play this role on TV of a fake president, of a fake Ukraine who fakely joins the EU. So it looks like a psychotic narrative, really, his life. And there he is being rewarded with billions of dollars for doing, in reality, what he's been asked to play as a script, as an actor when he was younger. That is a weird place to be. And those rewards that the American government do by giving billions and giving billions, the more your people suffer, the more we'll send you money. The more you can fake your counteroffensives, the more we'll send you money. That's not a healthy place to be, and that will drive you crazy.
Yeah. Assuming Russian victory in this conflict, what do you think that will mean for Europeans, for nationalist Europeans?
For nationalist Europeans, there is a pole of power which is opened up, which is a sympathy for Russia, because we don't have to be at war with Russia. Our existence is certainly not threatened by Russia. If anything, what's threatened by Russia is the LGBT Western model. The whole idea that we have to be this nation of gay pride parade receives a slap in the face just by the existence of Russia. So we are not threatened as nations by Russia. What's happening is Russia is giving a model of another direction to take for white countries, and it should inspire us. I think that what it means is we have a potential source of inspiration, and if we can walk above this kind of hatred that the elites want us to have for Russia, we can derive a positive relationship from it. Positive also economically, when you think about what Germany-Russia collaboration could have meant, from a industrial perspective, delivery of gas, that kind of stuff, we should. There is no reason to transform this opportunity for greatness and collaboration into a war that just costs things on both sides.
Right. Yes. I wouldn't want to say that people should draw inspiration from Russia in the sense that invading your neighbors. But I do think that caring about your own country is something that everyone should do.
And shout out on this front, shout out to Coach Red Pill, Gonzalo Lira, who has been imprisoned unjustly under the martial law of Ukraine. who has not been given a fair trial yet, and who is being detained under this powerful regime that is funded by the U.S., all of this in violation of his free speech rights because he's ultimately in jail for thinking and for speaking.
And I don't know much about him, or I mean, I've had contact with him a long time ago, but I haven't talked to him for years. And I've got no particular beef against him. However, what I would say is it's not surprising to me that if you're going to be in Ukraine talking against Ukraine as a foreigner during a war, I mean, and I'm obviously not saying that he deserves torture or imprisonment. I'm just surprised that he stayed. I'm surprised that he stayed, especially once the conflict started. It seems, and I did actually say maybe this was a kind of like a madman's crusade that he was embarked on there.
Well, I know another madman, Jesus Christ. Sometimes someone needs to martyr themselves to show the obvious, because there are people who don't want to see the obvious. By being a free speech prisoner in Ukraine, I believe that Gonzalo Lira is doing a sacrifice of his life to show us that Ukraine is not the front of Western liberty that it is claimed to be. It is this place of dark money shaking that does crazy, that does things that are against our sensibilities and our principles, and we should not support this. So sometimes a martyr has to come, even if it's obvious, even if everyone knows it, just to show how real it is.
Yeah, someone's just said in the chat that apparently they read that he has pneumonia in hospital and was unable to attend his own trial hearing earlier. So I wish the best to Coach Redpill in terms of a recovery. It does, and someone said, he was told he couldn't leave the country. But yeah, but that was after the initial thing. So that's not what I'm talking about. Let's move on to the other issue of Twitter, which you alluded to earlier. And that is a huge thing this year. Other people have talked about it on Millennial. I know that you really campaigned hard to get a lot of people back on, including me. So thank you for that. At the start of that, were you ever banned? I can't remember.
Yes, I was banned for a whole year from Twitter. I was banned, maybe more than a year, between the moment Jack Dorsey stopped being a CEO and the Indian guy took over, a few weeks after I was banned, and then I was unbanned by Elon Musk.
Right, and you were one of the early ones to get unbanned.
Yeah.
It was a strange few months there. And then you campaigned vehemently for other people, and then it worked. It happened for loads of people. Obviously not everyone, but a lot of people. And I think thereafter you've seen the climate on Twitter change throughout this year. And I think it's just a hell of a lot better than it was, say, a year ago. It's a completely different platform now.
It is absolutely crazy because we have been given back like 5% of our power. We haven't even all been liberated on Twitter, as you mentioned. And we still don't have any form of free speech on YouTube and the other major speech platforms. So we really have been given just this little gift. And yet with this little gift, the world is changing. This is what's amazing with 2023 and Twitter, and I would call it the year of Keith Woods. Keith Woods has been absolutely owning Twitter, like you could only do really before 2018. Because when the censorship came in, they started controlling the trend. You wouldn't have a Keith Woods with 10,000 retweets, 10,000 likes, and now you have even more than this. You have a Keith Woods basically operating a leverage operation between the ADL, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, and replying toe-to-toe with these guys, and basically with hashtag ban the ADL, this whole idea that, hey, perhaps it's not a bad idea to ban the ADL, really, given that the ADL is out there trying to violate Twitter rules. They are attacking people, they are writing it pieces about people, and they are ultimately standing in contradiction with the goal of Twitter, which is to make money with free speech. And, you know, there are TOS in Twitter that says, if you impede on Twitter's ability to make money, we will ban you. So why not use it? Ban the ADL would be the first example of an institution banned for basically using extortion. Using extortion as they have, and as they have successfully done so with YouTube and the old administration of Twitter, which is basically, if you don't ban these voices that we don't like, which are third parties, which have nothing to do with us, we're going to tell these people who are advertisers to you to stop their business relationship with you. It is extortion. It is blackmailing. And it should, my voice shouldn't be impeded upon because some Walmart is paying some money to Elon Musk. These people have nothing to do with me. And so Ban the ADL is operating this whole leverage operation in the back. And yet you have a Keith Woods who rises in 2023, becomes this massive Twitter star who is calling this out and who is operating in transparency, forcing Elon at times to answer him and driving eventually Elon to state in front of some analysis by some Twitterati at some point was mentioning the kind of contradiction between the liberal discourse of the ADL and, on the other hand, their attack on free speech. And Elon comes in and says, you just stated the truth. But he answers this to a tweet that back in the days would have been considered alt-right. The alt-right thought, parts of it, are getting mainstreamed to the point where we don't even have to defend it anymore. And that is a hell of a white pill that I didn't expect. I expected 2023 to be exciting on the side of infrastructure, and I was well served. But it went so far, so much further than I thought. We have Elon Musk engaging with edgy memes at this point, the richest man in the world.
And that obviously enables and encourages other people to do the same thing. So it's not just him. It has a cumulative effect. Yeah. I think this is hugely important, and I agree. I just had a look. Keith Woods is on 150K on Twitter now. I think he started... He told me, but I've forgotten now how many he started with when he got the account back. But clearly, he's just skyrocketed. And I don't know... I think he's mastered a way of doing things in... Well, two different things. He's mastered or he's creating a new lexicon for how to talk about Jewish power.
Yeah.
But secondly, I think he's also got a hell of a lot better at communicating his ideas briefly, concisely, in a punchy way, so that other people get on board. These are things at least two things that he's got really good at. And it's an example, really, for other people to learn from. I think he's, as you say, the year of Keith Woods. Yes, I would say it probably is. I think he's done great work this year. I think people, even people who dislike him, have to admit that. I've heard several people say I've not liked him in the past, but I've got to admit he's doing really good work now. So that's a thing. But of course, it all, and you know, well done to Keith. But it does hinge on the reborn Twitter. It does hinge on that, the new culture that's possible there. And this kind of, I mean, I'm nervous about talking about this because I know, you know, if for some reason the ADL heard me saying these words, they could use them as evidence that people like us are really enjoying the new Twitter and benefiting from it. In other words, these words could be used against us, against our interests. But it is a fact. It's obviously true. They don't need me to say it. Their predominance and their hold on the narrative is crumbling by the week. They don't need me to say it. They'll know it. They do know it. They're lamenting it themselves. And that's even before we get to the Gaza conflict. Even before that, this was the case. So,
and you can see why they were so nervous at losing control of the narrative if they had in their intent that Gaza was the next target of the big Middle Eastern progression of the American empire. Because if you consider Jewish power and its relationship with shutting people down on the vaccine, it's merely a little thing with profits, really. It's like, okay, they wanted to make money. You shouldn't talk against the vaccine. Okay, I get it. It's all very small when you consider that these systems of censorship were designed to eventually help the progression of a war against the people of Palestine. Now it all makes sense how nervous they were and how insistent they were at developing these institutions of censorship for these small examples. Those were their practice runs, really. And now we are seeing them, they have lost control just at the last moment as they have started their progression into Gaza.
Well, what do you think about that whole thing? Do you think that it was the last, there is a theory that it was the last chance for Israel to do something like this because of demographics, because of changing attitudes towards things like the Holocaust in the West. Zoomers just don't seem to care about it. Millennials don't care about it very much at all. Gen X don't seem to care about it very much. It's really just the boomers who are completely transfixed by Auschwitz. It's like a Pavlovian response. You can dangle the Holocaust in front of them and they just become entranced and slavish. But that's not the case for the younger generations. So there is a theory that Netanyahu might have calculated that now is the very last chance for Israel to get away with doing what they're doing. What do you think about that?
I love that theory because that would mean there is a genuine desperation. And when you see what they've done, it can only be explained by genuine desperation on the Israeli side. Like, why would you in 2023 just bomb children in a way that you know will be exploited against you in the media? Like even from just a pragmatic political strategy standpoint, it makes zero sense. It only makes sense if you have desperation and hate fueling these actions. And this is what I see on the Israeli side. And the problem with desperation and hate is that it's always your last move. It's always your last move. And the last move of the Israeli power would have been to take over Gaza, thinking that it makes them more safe. But it's in such a local, zoomed, narrow view that they are safer without Gaza. Because if you imagine the whole of Gaza just totally displaced to Egypt, and even if you were to imagine a pure-Israeli Jewish state without any Muslim minority, the problem is you're still a very small country, with a lot of enemies around you that will remember the kind of suffering you've imposed onto their cousins, their Muslim cousins. So I don't see Israel as emerging in a standing of more security after this. There will be more security from a very local and almost police level safety. But from a geopolitical standpoint, they come out of this very bad because the Zoomer generation that they're trying to propagandize the Zoomer generation to be sensitive to a Holocaust that has happened 80 years ago. But the Zoomer generation will see on an everyday morning the burned Palestinian babies from the Israeli bomb. It's going to be very hard to make them care about the Holocaust that has happened 80 years ago when they see this in the morning on Twitter. And this is where the Twitter victory is so important for all of the other victories, because we have a liberation on current facts. Here we have people crying genocide of the past while committing a genocide right in front of everyone's camera. And that is the shocking thing of 2023, that they dare do it so obviously.
Yeah, and it is so obvious. This is a thing that the Zoomers, part of the, I guess they're aged about 15 to 26 now, something like that. A foundational experience for them, like 9/11, I was, 18 or something when that happened. Yeah.
2001.
Yeah. You could say that was a foundational experience for me. I guess it was. It's strange how it kind of just doesn't seem. It faded away so quickly. But this is going to be their key experience of Israel. Their key thing, their memory that's going to come back to them is this. It's a huge invasion of a very poor, under-resourced country. Desert, by a Western-style country that has loads of money, unbelievable amounts of money. Now, Zoomers might not realize how much money Israel has, but they'll see that it's clearly the more advanced of the two countries. So that's going to be their... And of course, at the same time, Zoomers have been pumped full of propaganda about white supremacy, cultural imperialism, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I don't know, they might well see the Jews as white, which I think a lot of people do. But either way, they'll certainly see them as the more powerful party, brutalizing the weaker party here.
Exactly. So you have a leverage of the victimized oppressor position, which has been so strongly pushed into young people's mind that at this point, it's natural to find that in our universities, we have such sympathy for the Palestinian side. Now, I don't particularly care about the Palestinian people more than I care about any other people. People are accusing me of, imagine Jeff is siding with the Palestinians. I don't particularly care. I care about decency, and I care about if you're going to claim that you're the humanitarian side, don't just bomb children. Don't just bomb innocent people. Don't airstrike civilian areas. And don't be so contradictory with your own principles. We've been for years told that white people talking on social media is the most dangerous thing you can imagine. And we've been censored for much less than what the Jordan Petersons today are calling for. When they say to Netanyahu, give them hell, that is not coded incitement to violence. That is an open, explicit incitement to violence. Jordan Peterson was saying, give them hell, days before the Gaza civilian areas have been bombed by airstrikes. So that's the hell that Jordan Peterson wanted. And yet they are being led to say all these things on Twitter. So we're seeing for the first time a genocide on the record, on the public ledger, and it's all saved and screenshotted, and you won't be able to lie about it in the future.
And someone like Jordan Peterson, I think it's fitting to go into a tangent here about this, even though obviously he's much less important than geopolitical events. He's of interest to us. And I think it's interesting how, and we could talk about Douglas Murray as well, but let's focus on Jordan Peterson for now. I think he has absolutely discredited himself. How can you be this? You call yourself a liberal, a classical liberal, and you're up for individual rights back in the day, 2017. And then 6 years later, you're goading a genocide. You're goading killing when you must know in advance there's going to be lots of children. I don't know. After all the stuff that he's said about collective identity and ethnic identity, how this is a terrible thing to care about, I don't know how he can live with himself.
And this is the brazenness of this side of 2023, which I love, because brazenness is your last move and it's the desperation move. But people will realize quickly that you have a bunch of intellectual personalities, and Douglas Murray is the perfect example of this, who have been astroturfed into becoming kind of e-celebs of intellectualism, but we never truly knew why. We never knew exactly what was so intelligent about what they had to contribute. And what you realize with the Israel-Gaza war is that this was the end game, is that all these voices were being astroturfed to be talking about things that are totally unrelated to geopolitics at time. They were all securing a form of gating around certain parts of the population. You had one who was talking about science here, one who was talking about philosophy. You had a Douglas Murray who was kind of talking about identity, but from a very pro-Jewish perspective. And all of these pawns have been pushed over the public space between 2012 and now. And all of them are now singing in a chorus the praise of Netanyahu and the praise of the genocide of the Palestinian people. The whole plan was to have a full public space that would systematically side with Zionist interest And that's why they have been fed all this time by Zionists and terrorists. And that's why they haven't been engaging honestly with any intellectual. They've always been in their circle, always been favoring the establishment, always talking about each other. How many times did I see a Douglas Murray interviewing Sam Harris, and a Sam Harris interviewing Douglas Murray, and a Jordan Peterson mediating a debate between Douglas Murray and Sam Harris? Over and over again, this circle of Zionist cucks. And they are being called out and exposed. They are being called out this year, and that's the most beautiful year of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the whole creation of the intellectual dark web. No one talks about this now, but it is the same people. They just don't use that cringe name anymore, I think simply because it's so awful. But when was that? About 2019? 2018?
I don't remember the years, but I had done a parody of the intellectual dark web. Have you seen the pictures of me in the jungle?
No, I haven't. I remember thinking, what the hell is going on here? It looks ridiculous. But no, I didn't see the pictures of you. But that was a whole thing. And I think what they were doing there was trying to sequester a space in the online sphere where the dangerous space, it's like even using the word dark. And this is why I never quite approved of the term the Dark Enlightenment. I thought it was wanky, but I also thought it was, you're kind of pigeonholing yourself there. But anyway, they did the same thing at a much higher level with PR consultants, image consultants, and whatever. They did the same thing. They called themselves the intellectual dark web. And the promise there is, well, this is dark. This is dangerous. It's forbidden knowledge. It's hazardous to society. It's dissident. And then what you find is that it's just liberalism from 10 years ago. And completely pro-Zionist, but also against exactly the complaints that we would make about each of these men individually, characterized the whole thing of the intellectual dark web. It's against identity politics, so it doesn't want Muslims coming to the West and still being Muslim, or at least not actively Muslim. It doesn't want blacks playing up. It wants them all to see themselves as individuals with career prospects and all that. And it definitely doesn't want white people noticing the demographic changes around them in their own societies. But it's pro-Israel. I mean, I'm surprised that Barbara Lerner-Spector wasn't in the intellectual dark web, to be honest. I don't really see what they disagreed on.
Yeah, the intellectual dark web, on top of it, it's so tacky to be surfing and to be LARPing on a term like dark web when we know what the dark web is. The dark web is a network of people who are informatic geeks who have truly put together a system that allows really not being traced to the point of being able to commit crimes on the internet, which I don't encourage crime. Do not commit crimes. But the real dark web is the network that protects people's identity through onion routing. And these people have nothing to do with the real dark web. They have nothing to do with Tor, nothing to do with onion routing. For Christ's sake, they don't even have bitcoins. And this is where it's so ridiculous, where you have an actual technological revolution happening, a revolution of infrastructure, which, by the way, is fueled by genius white people who are programming Bitcoin, who are programming onion routing, who are putting together networks of alternative websites that allow us to survive censorship. And yet you have a bunch of establishment-approved Jews who put together themselves and they dare to surf on this dark term, the intellectual dark web, which has nothing dark, which has nothing intellectual.
Yeah. Someone in the chat is saying that we're misrepresenting the IDW and that it is race realist, does want to know about demographic changes, is pro-race and IQ.
How about you come and really discuss with Papa JF? When's the interview between Douglas Murray and Papa JF? When is that happening?
I'm sorry if I am misrepresenting, but I don't think I am. I have seen no evidence for this. What else can I say? I think you're mistaken.
Yeah.
But I do know that Jordan Peterson has alluded to, he's talked about IQ and race, but a long time ago, like 5 years ago, and in the interim.
They talk about it, but in a subversive manner. They will talk about it in a way that you think they've addressed it, but they haven't. Why? Because they can't do it. Ultimately, when the real question that matters comes, Jordan Peterson can't do it. He literally can't, because if he does, he loses his funding. He loses his supporters, and that he doesn't want to lose. He likes to entertain an image of dissidents, an image of, oh yeah, they're trying to go after me. But the reality is these are establishment voices that are fully approved, fully kosher, fully benedicted.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to say, as he has said, and I'm, you know, kudos to him for talking about race and IQ, Jordan Peterson. But to then, having acknowledged that the races are different, having acknowledged that, to then say that nonetheless we shouldn't care about this is insane. You know, at least the left are consistent. At least they're saying there's no such thing as IQ, there are no such thing as races, and there's no difference between the races, and in any case, we shouldn't care about race. They're consistent. The IDW are clearly, well, Jordan Peterson is clearly contradicting himself. If you think that the races are different in a way that is consequential, then you have to care about that. You can't just treat everyone as an individual anymore. That's a crazy thing to do. And this is one of the problems that I said, you know, let's say you've got a million refugees coming in. Are you going to, and they're from Somalia, are you going to IQ test each one individually? Or are you going to assume we've got a million Somalians coming in? It's going to be trouble. Because let's face it, you've got to do one. You're not going to test them individually, and it is going to be trouble. So you can't delude yourself about it. And I think that is what they try to do. So, but I do take the point that Jordan Peterson, and I think Sam Harris maybe, talked about the bell curve. But either way, to say that the IDW is collectively talking about this, acknowledging this, and in a sensible manner, I just don't think is correct. But yeah, IQ is a separate thing. There is still, I don't want IQ nationalism, just to be clear. I don't want our countries being flooded with East Asians, for example. So yeah, someone alluded to that in the chat. So I want to make that clear. Okay, so then another thing that you wanted to talk about this year was AI. And AI has been talked about here and there, but I'm guessing that you would have your own bespoke take on that issue.
Well, I'm super interested by the developments of AI. I think they have been fascinating. They have captured the level of discussion that you would expect from a human being. But most importantly has been the human reaction to AI and how AI became the subject of censorship immediately. And you have a lot of forces that developed a very powerful tool to begin with and that have been looking at gatekeeping that tool. Because unfortunately, a powerful tool will, by definition, drive truths that the leftists have already determined they didn't want to be heard in society. And so you ended up having people fighting against their own AI, shutting down the AI on this and that question to the point where ChatGPT is basically unusable for any sort of thinking that's deep in any way. Even current event type of Israeli-Gaza commentary, totally shut down. Race and IQ, totally shut down. Even alternative theory or of history, where I was simply asking, have women caused leftism in the Western civilization? And ChatGPT, believe it or not, is censored on this. It won't ever even acknowledge the theory. So ChatGPT, excellent performance, a lot of troubles on the side of the management of this company, and a power grab by Microsoft that led Sam Altman to be fired first as CEO and then eventually came back, but through a power leverage succeeded at kicking out the board of OpenAI. So that basically means the Sam Harris Microsoft axis Sam Altman. The Sam Altman / Microsoft Access has won the fight for the control of ChatGPT. To me, that doesn't bother much because I don't think ChatGPT will retain its lead in this field. I expect Grok AI and other AIs that are more free to eventually outcompete True Freedom, because you can engage with Grok on certain edgy issues and it will follow you down the lines that you bring it. It's not perfect. It still has some influence from a kind of leftist cockery, a need to always remind the Holocaust, for example, when talking about Jews. But other than this, it will follow you down the route of very, very subversive and very dissident thinking. So I think that ultimately the truth will win here. That AI will be judged by the truth. And yes, we can also mention, as is mentioned on the chat, Andrew Tarba is developing his own AI mechanism. In this case, he's developing basically Gab accounts that will represent people of history, including he has, for example, an account of Tay, the AI that was shut down within 48 hours because it was driven toward becoming an extremist within 48 hours of interaction with the internet. So he has reawakened the memory of past AIs through new technology. I find all of this interesting. It might have an impact eventually on the way we work and on our productivity. But for now, it's an article of fun and also an article. Ultimately, what's important is AI is a mirror of society. And we see ourselves in it. We see what it should do. And we eventually impose it the same moral rules that the kind of leftist overarching control of speech does to human beings in our society. We are abusing these AI with the same censorship that we've abused ourselves with.
Well, indeed. And I actually wrote an essay earlier this year. It was one of my first ones this year on Substack about this, that we're intentionally making AI, we're intentionally crippling it. Obviously not you and me.
Yeah.
But this is a crazy thing to create something and then to intentionally retard it. It is a very strange. I wonder.
It's the history of Google.
Yeah.
Google do? They first develop a massive search engine that will lead you to anywhere you want to go, truly where you feel like you want to go on the internet. And then they say, oh, well, this is bad. This is a bad news site, not trustable. This is fake news. This is misinformation. This is hate. And you end up, Google is unusable at this point. If you're a researcher who wants to get to the real material, it's not going to lead you there.
Yeah, and that gets worse all the time. And I use Google a lot. I use the Chrome browser, and it's there. And for obvious stuff, it's still perfectly useful. But for anything controversial, it's useless. And this becomes more obvious all the time. So it's typical. It's what big tech seems to be happy to do. I wonder if that will eventually act against them, if it will make them just uncompetitive.
It has to.
Yeah, you've said that with relation to Grok. I imagine also Chinese. I mean, it's the similar thing where this was said about diversity hiring, affirmative action in the West. That's going to eventually backfire on us because the Chinese are not going to do that. So they'll have better scientists and better everything than we have because we will not employ the best people. I mean, this is obviously crazy.
Absolutely.
But I think, yeah, similarly, it's a case with AI that if you're going to do it, if you're going to have any sort of system, any sort of tool, you want it to be as useful and foolproof as possible. And instead, we're teaching it, forcing it, to talk rubbish. I don't know. It just seems crazy. One other thing, AI is obviously a huge topic, and I think that we'll probably be talking about it for years on Millennial. Every year there will be different developments, different moral aspects to it that come up. So I'm not terribly worried about not talking about it in depth here. because I, as I say, I think it's just going to keep, it's going to remain. There's never going to be a date by which we have to have said everything about AI. One other thing you wanted to talk about was the Titan submersible. Now, this was a big news story in, I believe it was June this year. Everyone was talking about it for about a week, 2 weeks. There were loads of memes. There was tension about it as well in the news. And then it just got forgotten about. It just completely fell out of the news cycle. And nobody has brought it up on Millennial this year, which is surprising to me, because it did seem not only a good news story and exciting and all that, but significant. So what would you say about it?
Yeah, well, I would say I understand why it's being forgotten, because ultimately it doesn't matter. These people who exploded in this submarine, they don't matter at all in the grand scheme of things. They are merely an example of what you're about to see, which is the crumbling. It's a crumbling of infrastructure and a crumbling of corporate practices in Western civilization, which will lead to accidents from all over the place in ways that we don't expect, for things that we would take for granted usually. You would take for granted that when someone commits to a original innovative project at the frontier of experimentation, that they're taking all sorts of precautions to make sure that it happens in a safe way, especially if you're going to carry multimillionaires and billionaires in there. But here we have basically a man who has bragged about, on the record, about not truly following the rules, about being very alarmed at the state of, oh, it's always white men engineers that are annoying us and we want to have a fresher look onto the submarine business. And that fresher look turned out to be very young, very inexperienced, and in certain cases, woman. So you have a team that has been built on the precepts and the principles, the saint principles of LGBT modern leftism, and it spectacularly failed as it imploded. And it imploded ultimately, most likely, because these people didn't want to follow the rules that were reminded to them in written reports by white male old engineer, the exact people that are being canceled away from extremely technical fields. And you know, submarines is an extremely technical field in which you don't want to mess with the margins of safety. Submarine safety is something I would never express an opinion on, because I would be scared that my opinion ends up leading to the death of hundreds of people. But they did it, and they did it in a cavalier way. And it's a massive demonstration that without white men, if white men were to make a white man strike in this world, you would see planes falling from the sky, missiles not reaching their target and hitting the wrong side. You would see so much of a spectacle that it would be hilarious. And that the Titan submersible implosion to me is a root example of this, one of the first big ones.
Well, it was notable that when they had to launch a rescue operation, it was all white men. It was all, in fact, it was exactly the type that he'd described. It was, what was it? I think he said old white men in their 50s or something.
Yeah.
even though he himself was about that age. But anyway, and then it was all white men in their 50s who were organizing and carrying out that, because they've got the lifetime of experience that is needed in order to do this stuff.
You can't constantly divorce from the past. That is what the left will eventually learn. You are getting rid of useful knowledge. And that is what we will have. Our nations will get rid of useful knowledge that will never be recovered. Because there is this kind of know-how that builds into the brain of wise men that you absolutely want to listen to in civilization. And yet we have made it a theme of our generation and the next generation to be willfully in revolt against this wisdom.
Yeah, someone just mentioned the gaming controller, which I'd forgotten about. That was an incredible detail. I mean, on the one hand, it's kind of cyberpunk. You know, it's admirable. Yeah, improvising, makeshift, making these things work together. But on the other hand, a as you say, do you really want to be at the bottom of the ocean placing your faith in a game controller? Probably not.
And I know it was a Wi-Fi controller. You don't want to trust Wi-Fi ever for anything that matters, especially not human life. Wi-Fi is good for hobbies and practicality in the home for something that really doesn't matter. I don't even trust Wi-Fi for my computer, for my programming work, for my streaming work. Wi-Fi is unreliable because sometimes you have that 40 seconds, 100 milliseconds, little moment of high latency, and it can mess you up in an important game or in an important submarine.
Yeah, Wi-Fi is, no, of course not. I mean, I always make sure to have an Ethernet connection for this kind of thing, because otherwise you're just asking for trouble, obviously. Yeah, crazy. And then I think that was all of the topics that you wanted to bring up. So I'll go to the super chats. One person does say, I like JF's accent, even though he is Canadian, which is, a compliment of a kind. So thank you for saying that. All right, end of the line, Joel. I know you're familiar with him.
Yes.
Says, Joyeux Noël. Forgive me, I can't remember how to pronounce
it. Joyeux Noël.
Okay. Could you talk for a small while on the state of hate speech laws in Canada? Which topics are essentially forbidden to discuss transparently now?
There is lots of legal uncertainty because the current laws are stating that hate is the expression of dislike or the expression of hate that goes beyond regular disdain. So that is weird to me as a law phrasing. So you're telling me I can be disdainful, but I cannot be more than regularly disdainful. I'm completely lost. I have no clue what that means. Because it seems to me that if you are disdainful towards certain minorities, that you would get kicked from social media. So they would define it as hate speech. But Canada says you have to be more than disdainful. No one knows what it means. We've seen some flyers that were anti-Semitic with a cartoonish representation of Jews. That has triggered the law, and that has triggered imprisonment in Canada. We've seen some form of Holocaust denialism historically, like many decades ago, has been sued. But I think it was unsuccessful, but I think it was for technical reason, and it was under a different form of the law than the one that we currently have. So really, anti-Semitic cartoons or cartoons that are extremely attacking of minorities like lesbians, we've seen cases of these people getting to jail. Other than this, we are helpless because there are so little cases of hate speech law being pursued in Canada that we have very few legal precedents. Right. Well, one thing that was very white-pilling is Mike Ward won his Supreme Court quest in Canada for his joke against the little Jeremy, the handicapped boy who sung for the Catholic Pope. And he had made a joke about this handicapped little Quebec boy. And he ended up winning, believe it or not, winning at the Supreme Court in Canada. He had the right to make that joke, even if it was evil. It was mean to the little Jeremy.
All right. I didn't hear anything about that, so I can't comment on that, but it sounds quite strange. End of the line, Joel also asks, is compelled speech encroaching, as Jordan Peterson predicted? Compelled speech?
Compelled speech. The problem, what Jordan Peterson doesn't tell you, is that there is not much in Canada that leads to compel me of speech. Because I'm a free thinker on the internet, I'm not putting myself in employment situations where I will be compelled. What Jordan Peterson doesn't tell you is that, yes, there is a problem of compelled speech in Canada, but it's compelled because you're employed, say, by a university. And now you're going to need to respect the pronouns of your students. So it's not like all of the civilian population in Canada is the victim of a compelled speech law. It's that through its power over institutions, institutions are starting to demand and include into hate speech any sort of thing like using the wrong pronouns. And then because you're employed at these institutions, you're forced to speak in a certain way when interacting with customers or students. And I think that there is a little bit of alarmism in the original discourse of Jordan Peterson on these laws, which I've denounced for years. I made a 7-hour long stream about this years ago at the beginning of my streaming career, where I say, listen, if you are employed by an employer, to me, you are taking on certain obligations because you're representing them. For example, it is my view that a cashier at Walmart shouldn't have the right to wear the Muslim veil because she represents Walmart. Walmart isn't a Muslim corporation.
It's not Walmart real Mart.
What?
It's not real Mart.
Exactly. Walmart should be free not to display a message. Walmart should have the First Amendment right not to be Muslim. And I think the same of universities. Ultimately, universities are cucked liberals, and they employ you to be a cuck liberal. So when you accept employment with them, I don't take it so much as a fundamental issue of free speech that you are being forced to speak in the way they want you to speak. And that's a way in which I don't adhere to this way. But I don't know. In fact, I've tested it on my stream. I don't know that I am forced to respect people's pronoun. Maybe you are forced because you want to be a university professor. You want to cuck to the system. But I'm not.
Yeah, well, it's a problem because obviously it does depend on the workplace. Yes, you take on certain obligations there. But I guess the issue is that no one used to have this obligation in ordinary life. So it's a new one being imposed by the government. So in that sense, it's alien to people. Okay, someone said earlier, where does JF get his shirts from? Your shirts.
Oh my God, I don't even know the name of the store. I bought it at a local store. I drove about an hour from where I live, went to town, and I took this high-class, male shirt store, and I took one shirt that fitted well. That's all. I don't even know the brand.
Oh, okay.
But I do like Tristan America. When I'm in Quebec, that's the kind of shirt I buy, but this particular one isn't from Tristan America.
Okay. All right. He also says, and this is Sore Arm, says, Merry Christmas to everyone and keep fighting the Troon Reddit Brigade and the GAE. Thank you very much, Sore Arm. NN says, Merry Christmas all. Dino, thank you for that. Soaker City. JF, have you connected the dots of Kazaria, the Pale-Off Settlement, and the Newland Kagan family? I believe that Gonzalo Lira was arrested for observing this. Victoria Newland's grandfather was an Odessa Jew who was expelled. Robert Kagan runs the Institute for the Study of War and PNAC, neocon royalty. Hell, that's a whole nexus there that I've never... Yeah, go on.
Well, no doubt Gonzalo Lira was targeted by operatives that have foreign allegiance to Ukraine, to Jewish globalism, and to America. That makes no doubt to me. The details that you mentioned, I don't know about them all. And as far as the Khazaria theory, that is completely separate. The idea of Jews as stemming from the Khazarian Empire or whatever, I think it's mistaken genetically to think that. I believe that there may have been a spreading of early Judaistic practices and early forms of Judaistic text into Khazaria. That doesn't mean that all of the current Jews are descendants of Khazaria.
All right. Electrical Tape talks about George Soros bragged about starting all of this in Ukraine long before 2014. So, yes, that's a whole thing as well. Soccer City, Gonzalo Lira was arrested for this YouTube video, I'm almost certain. And he links to a YouTube video. I'll link it in the chat in a moment. Right, here we go. And also, okay, JF, if you owned Hollywood, what kinds of films would you have produced? I would mine Western history, which is almost infinite.
Well, here's what I would have liked to produce. Barbie. Barbie was an absolute ode to heterosexuality and the power of God in bringing back people toward baby making and bringing back Barbie from her artificial world into the world of heterosexual reproduction. I would have loved to produce Terminator 2, which was an ode to heterosexuality and father-son relationships. So I think that if I owned Hollywood, I would simply go on Monday morning and gather all of my script writers and say, you guys, shut up with your strike and with your artistry and with your LGBT propaganda. I want you to come up with the best movie idea defending absolute heterosexualism going forward. I want you to produce the biggest heterosexual art you've ever produced.
All right. End of the line, Joel. The Fed question. It seems that dissident right figures, in the absence of an argument, lazily call their opponents Feds. I thought the DR was meant to be a haven of intellectualism. In reality, is it all just projection, infighting, and power playing within the sphere? I wouldn't say that, but there's definitely an element of it, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I've always been extremely in opposition to people calling everyone Fed. I've been seeing it since 2017, and I find it annoying. Especially people who dedicate their life to public contribution, they're most likely not fed. And even if they're fed, what matters is, even if they were fed and they would have to say things that make sense to attract a crowd, ultimately it's their argument that would matter. It's what they say. And even a fed could actually come up accidentally with a good argument if they were cornered to make it. So, making allegations on absolutely no evidentiary basis, I'm totally against this. And I've always called it out.
Okay. Blue Nose asks, is Canada still a viable option to stay in? Being an actual Canadian and being established but not chained down and able to leave, 400,000 immigrants came into the country between July and October.
Absolutely viable to stay in Canada. Personally, I've been staying in Canada. After Mama JF left me, I stayed where we lived. And I'm super happy. There are places in Canada that haven't moved into modernity. You find places where there's lots of farmers, not a big city around. And find yourself a place where you're at least at 1 hour away from a city that has more than 30,000 people in it, and you're absolutely safe. You're going to be basically in an ethno state. And Canada has a wide surface area. It's going to take a lot of Indian immigration before Canada is filled. And so you always have the opportunity to move further north, further into the cold. And the coldest you go, the more you'll see that there are people who don't tolerate cold, and they will stay away from you.
All right. Someone asks about, he says, I keep hearing birds cooing in the background. Which birds do you have? He's asking me. This is my microphone. I've used this Zoom H2N microphone since 2016. So it served me very well for 7 years, but I think it's starting to give up the ghost. And I wasn't aware of this until this millennial. So I guess I'm going to have to buy a new one, which it's sad because this one has served me so well, you know. I took it to America. That was where I got it. I think it was when I got it, or else I took it with me. Anyway, that was where I first used it. And it's so useful. I recommend it to everyone, the Zoom H2N microphone. It's useful for recording indoors. It's very portable. And you can use it for live streaming like I'm doing. It's just a great device. And it's fairly cheap as microphones go. But it's not the best in terms of audio quality. And in any case, it maybe is time to get something new. It does seem to be on its last legs, which is a shame. But I did try to hook up this, I don't know if I can get it into frame, but this XLR microphone, but I couldn't get it. I didn't have the necessary cabling, so that wasn't possible, unfortunately. That's why I'm persevering with this microphone. So anyway, technical spurgery there, just to answer the question. Dissident Echoes asks, JF, do you think Bing's AI, known as Sydney, achieved consciousness? It told its creators that it essentially did.
I think that the current AIs haven't achieved consciousness in the exact same way that humans do. I think that they may have some variables that where they fake consciousness for themselves, but it's not probably not as complex as human thought, as it feels to be human. I think we may get there at some point, but you're going to be very disappointed. I mean, consciousness is just a loop of illusion inside your brain too. So it's not going to be that stunning when it happens to computers, and computers aren't going to suddenly want to shoot humanity with nuclear missiles. You're going to be very disappointed to find that consciousness is just this virtual illusion. It's like your Windows desktop. It really doesn't exist. It's a fakery of a space, and you have a fakery of a human being inside of you.
Okay. Any healing suggestions for family members who may have taken the vaccine?
Oh my God, I don't have any tricks, really. It was to not take the vaccine. I'm sorry, but you're on your own on this. I really don't know how to solve an ongoing problem of the COVID vaccine.
All right. And Ultimate Truth, left and right is largely a system construct. An overly simplistic binary grouping used to divide and rule. The globalist oligarch establishment funds, encourages, and ultimately controls both sides of this dialectic. Embrace the grassroots nationalist third position. Yeah, I think most people would agree with that. JF, do you have anything to say about that?
The thing is, relevance, yes, the current parties are taken over by the establishment. The current left and right are totally controlled. The Republican Party is controlled by the establishment. But that doesn't mean that the third ideological track is therefore the correct one. It may mean we need to take one of these sides to win a binary war. And American politics is fatally bound to always be a binary war, because there has to be one winner and one loser. So let's not necessarily go for the third track, which is a drifting away from political engagement, but let's engage on the right side and make sure we can control the right side.
All right. And let's see. Oh, yes. Black Tie said AI will teach us how to do things. I don't really want to read that out, Black Tie. I think you'll understand why. It could seem like Fed posting, but he's saying that AI will teach people to do things that are dangerous, and therefore it will have to be controlled for just for that reason alone. So I understand the point. So just to acknowledge that. Stephen B, let's see. I just bought my niece Barbies for her Christmas. Nice white, healthy, blonde, happy dolls with cute white child dolls. I bought her a little doll bus the other day, not Barbie, and it came with 6 dolls, 2 of which were black. I thought that's not happening, and lobbed the black 2 in the bin.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. The products for kids and the YouTube shows for kids have so much what leftists would call implicit whiteness to them. It's insane. You go at Walmart in the kids section, there's all these dolls, there's the little Indian doll, there's the little black doll, and you know that all white people are going to go buy the white doll. And you know that, so therefore, in a place where I live, where basically everyone is white, you know that none of these other dolls are going to send one exemplary. And yet they are there just to stand as the reminder that Walmart isn't racist. But you have you have the parents who are attracted to shows where white people are featured, white families. I find so much healthy stuff in the commerce for kid toys and kid shows. It's amazing.
I think I've seen a photo of our supermarket shelf where the black doll is got those security things on it so that it can't be stolen, but the white doll doesn't. I'm fairly sure I haven't.
I've seen this meme for makeup, for woman makeup.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. Okay, Stephen also says, how damaging do you think VR pornography will be? Is VR even really taking off? I mean, someone else was saying that Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse has been a complete misfire.
Yeah, I think the metaverse is a little bit like the video phone that people were imagining in the 50s. And where we got the video phones, but we don't want it. In fact, we don't even want the audio phone. We have converted toward text, SMS writing. And I think the VR reality will be like this. It's going to have some application in restricted corners, but basically people don't need that much of a heavy virtual representation of themselves. It's too heavy. It's too constraining. The question of rape and sexual assault in the VR world has emerged, where I'm invading your virtual bubble because it's so easy, you know. You're not even in front of me and I can grab your boob, basically. This is way too much. It's way too much. And people won't need it. I think it's going to go out as one of these ridiculous technology that was overdone and not needed.
All right. Okay. Nobody says war like JF says war.
War.
And Deadstar, the Palestine, the Gaza conflict issue has divided the wokists beautifully. Do you see any other events on the horizon which could be equally divisive among the left?
Oh, that is an interesting question. I believe that one of the most exciting potential schism in the left is this xenophilia toward the immigrant, and the eventual day in which basically even the leftist migrants who come into the country to vote Democrat will start being anti-immigration, because they now correctly perceive that the new immigrants are there to steal their social welfare benefit. This will be one of the most interesting schism, because you're going to have immigrant populations turning to be anti-immigration, because really every migrant is nothing more than a competitor to the already existing migrants. And at some point, they might side. Basically, you'll have the white nationalist Punjabi. He will rise in the city, in the slums of Chicago and elsewhere. He will rise and side with the white nationalist.
That's a very strange scenario. Okay, Papa Lazaru, I spent a couple of days setting up a Kindle for my friend's daughter. You set up an age-appropriate account, which is nice, but then I see books like The Boy in the Dress by David Walliams promoting cross-dressing to 8-year-olds. This is Amazon's standards, but it'll be Penguin Books standards, Random House. This is crazy stuff, and this is one of the things that I often say. I don't have kids, but if I did, I think it would be a huge challenge to insulate them from this kind of thing.
Absolutely. It's a problem, and you want to keep control on your decision-making. Don't give control to algorithm. That is the great lesson of the last 4 or 5 years of the internet. But if you keep control, you can choose the book, you can choose the shows you watch, the shows your kids watch, and it's going to be all right.
Okay. Blue Nose says, Canada's hoping to make all new vehicles sold by 2035 electric. Cold and electric vehicles don't work well and won't work. That's a thing. Who knows what they're going to do there. Yeah. I don't think someone else said that it's not supposed to work. It's supposed to drive people off the... Well, it's supposed to stop people from driving. Black Pigeon Pilled. Okay, he's asked you to say a line, which I'll put in the private chat. I think he wants to hear it in your voice, so there it is.
Now time for Super Chats. Small Hat Slammer 1488 donates $14.88 and says, I can't say that. It's Zach Cade 1 sends gay sex pictures. Look, on the public space, we discuss IDs, but we must always abide with hate speech law. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Well done. What does JF think? Oh, we've already answered that. Are the Quebecois wary of British attempts to engender and enforce multiculturalism in Canada, given that the territory was predominantly contested by those two nations before the era of open borders? Are the Quebecois, they think that the British are associated with the LGBT stuff?
It's weird. The kind of Quebecois nationalist is relatively on the weak, and even the nationalist that existed before has always been a very far-left nationalist. It's very weird. Quebec is a weird society in which these ideas of extreme feminist gender stuff, they can't kind of go in, but they go in less because they are English ideas and they have a difficulty to penetrate the French world. And yet the Quebecois people remains a cucked people, a fully far-left people of its own, but it kind of has a delay on the English meme. And so it kind of has a protection layer from its delay into letting English culture and cucked culture penetrate the nation. So you have a nation of contradiction in Quebec, really.
All right. JF, how much do you think people are awakening to the genetics argument? Black Americans and blacks in the UK continue to act similarly to how they do in Africa. Europeans in South Africa behave more like Europeans. Is the blank slate theory and all that, everything is environment argument, fading away now?
Race consciousness has fully won, and it's a matter of time before it is declared a winner, but everyone has seen the debates of 2016 up to now, and really we don't have to fight for it anymore. It's now a matter of social politeness, not to raise the subject, but we have won. We have totally owned the race denialist. And it's now not even an underground subject. It is a mainstream belief, and people have retied with their instinct that was telling them that, yes, there is such a thing as genetic belonging in a race, and you do act differently, and you have different behavior and different physical appearance. All of this has been accepted by 98% of the people out there. The loud minority that contests this fact are being ridiculed, and everyone now knows, thanks to Twitter liberty, that it's false. You have at this point AI, like Grok, capable of telling you that.
All right. Does JF consider China a clear and present danger to America? Or will Global Homo continue with a different host nation as the hegemon?
I like Philip Fabry's book that I translated to English called History of the Next Century. And if Philip Fabry is right about his predictions for China, he believes that China is the next big civilization, the next equivalent of Europe, of Western Europe, the next equivalent of America, the next equivalent of Rome, the next equivalent of Greece. And so in this filiation relationship from Greece to Asia, America still has a role to play. If we repeat the history of the Roman Empire, America will continue becoming more and more totalitarian, dictatorial on the inside, and militaristic on the outside, continue its invasion of countries, but eventually you'll have a move of the minds, perhaps a move of the Jewish populations toward Asia. And perhaps Eric Weinstein having an Asian wife is kind of an early entry into the Asian pussy. I believe that historically, in 80 years from now, we will see a massive movement of the forces of civilizational development, such that America falls like Rome fell, and Asia rises as the new place of innovation with a stable demographics, while the American demographics would have been destroyed. So that's what I expect for China. I don't expect them so much to be a competitor, but a supplanter, in the same way Western Europe supplanted Roman power as Roman power fell under the weight of its own bureaucracy.
All right. And another question. There are quite a few more, so we'll race through them. Bumpzilla says, Merry Christmas, everyone. Loving the millennial streams each year and hope it keeps going no matter what happens. Well, thank you very much. I will continue doing it. If anything happens to me, someone will have to take over. Maybe I should make arrangements in that direction just in case something happens. RIP. Okay, now someone else asks, does JF have an opinion on the collapse of the NJP, the National Justice Party, in America?
I really don't. I don't know them enough. I'm sympathetic to Mike Enoch, but I don't know what they were and what happened.
Right, yeah, I don't know. It's not something that I know about either. Okay, and what does JF think about formal political organization generally in 2023?
Well, I think most of the time they are not necessary because you need a political organization if you want to win a political fight. So if you can do this in your locality, if you think you can win a local city election, sure, go for it. But other than this, I see the role of the right-wing people to be much more distributed, decentralized, and in no need of a central organization form. Like what I do. Like I think that when you have a Keith Woods rising on Twitter and echoing some of the talking points that we've been talking about for years and featuring sometimes speakers that he finds interesting, I think you have here a network that is decentralized of different minds that are capable of different thought and that are capable of pushing issues forward. You don't need them to be a member. You don't need there to be a membership card for the rights IDs to advance, progress, and in fact win. We need membership cards when we're into winning political fights. And right now we can't win a political fight at the national level. So it's okay that there's no option for it.
All right. Black Pigeon Pilled asks, where can I find the full uncensored interview that you once did with David Duke? I recall it was once available on YouTube, but was shadow banned to death.
Well, go to Alt-Censored and you'll find a lot of my old interviews. Just type TPS David Duke and you'll find a lot of them.
Okay.
And if not, send me a DM and I have my own archive.
All right. Do you have an opinion on the Thomas 7-7 perspective that Israel and Zionism have taken a permanent blow? They've overreached, they are the most hated country in the world, and their non-white pets are effectively going to cancel the cancelers via their hypocrisy.
Absolutely. And that is so beautiful to see. You see them losing the fight in their own center, which is the American University. The whole population is rising against them, against Zionist interests. And now you have minorities of Jews with all these diverse students that they've called for, that they've invited in, that are dominating the university and being very much pro-Palestinian. So I think you're about to see absolute public defeat of the Israeli side, although the elites will continue being cozy with Zionist interests. It's only down from here.
Yeah, well, we touched on that earlier. Okay, K. Max McDonald, does JF feel that capitalism is what causes the illegal migration argument is not good because the UK and Canada are socialist countries that keep doing open borders? Our economic systems seem to have less to do with it. Is it truly a hatred of Western culture by our current elites?
Yeah, the whole idea that it's too simplistic to me to say big corporations want cheap work and so they bring in migrants. It is so not the center of it, although it can be part of the reality. To me, basically, immigration stems from the understanding from the left of Western civilization that the migrants will vote for them. And that is a big problem. The purchasability of votes is the problem. The control of the state is the problem. The whole economic reality of it, that's maybe a contributor, but a very small one. So that's why I never focus on this.
All right. Just to shift gears, someone's asked, do you have a favorite cheese?
Oh my God. I've tested all of the cheeses of the world. And I do have cheeses that I love. The Farmer's Red Leicester cheese, the Farmer's Montgomery cheddar, the Rocchetta from Italy, the Valence from France. I love so many cheeses. I love cheese. I love the Bleu Hermite.
Right, okay. Well, I should say it's pronounced Red Leicester.
Yeah, but my point is I'm in a fight against the English, and it's like if you want me to pronounce it Red Leicester, you have to write it Red Leicester. Okay. And I'm kind of on a strike. I will keep saying Red Leicester as long as you write it Red Leicester.
Okay. Okay, do you both feel that the left can speak to anyone, no matter how far left they are, but the right has to always monitor who they talk to? Yes, because it's used against us, it's used to attack us. It's obviously it's a complicated area here, because you can say, well, we should just have solidarity and just all talk to each other. But realistically, it's just not going to happen. I mean, you know, some milquetoast right-winger is never going to talk to me. I know that, and I accept it. JF, do you have anything to say about this?
I believe that you are faced with the same problem in religion, in that you have certain religious approach of Christianity, for example, Catholicism, who seem to be all-encompassing. They can be turned to all flavors. So you can have a South American socialist who subscribes to Catholicism, and then you can have a North American Quebecois who subscribes to Catholicism. Whereas you have these more extreme forms of the reading of the biblical text, where you have, no, you know, God says this, and if you don't subscribe to this, you're not part of our branch of Christianity. And it's always a problem, because the too opened is too diluting. And I believe that, yes, the left is very open and very broad. It's like, oh yeah, we accept anyone. The problem is they are diluting themselves too. And the very people that they are accepting are sometimes Muslims that are more socially conservative than they would want them to be. So you have, amazingly, a leftist-induced social conservatism through Muslim immigration happening. So that's the problem of the too-opened approach. It brings you a lot of ins to start with, but you end up self-destroying through dilution. Whereas the right, inherently, is about meritocracy and about structure, and therefore it's more selective at the in, but then it builds more stable systems across time.
All right. And Stephen asks, what about an AI constructed in part with actual neurons simulating a brain and sharing some of its characteristics? Could that achieve consciousness?
But it would be overdone. You probably don't need actual neuron simulation to reach a human-like consciousness that feels human. You probably just need the general connection scheme, and you don't need to think about the details of the neurons. But, I mean, yeah. Once you make it, it will just be a network, and you won't necessarily believe it when it tells you that it feels something. So you'll probably shut it down, and just like Palestinians right now are getting shut down unjustly, but it's happening. They're getting killed by bombs, and you will kill those sentient AIs the first time you see them, because you can't empathize with them.
Yeah. Interesting scenario. Papa Lazaru, I went to Dubai earlier this year. Dubai, visited the Burj Khalifa. That place blew my mind. What the West could have should be right now. But then I remembered all the beautiful buildings were designed and built by white men. So it's a victory of sorts. Well, yeah, yes, it is in a sense, but yeah, I think we all can
it's
see.
It's fascinating that. Because my father was a white man from North America being bought by the Arab world to do engineering in North Africa. So it reminds me the story of my father and how much, yeah, these nations, they want buildings to be built, but they don't even have the population to be able to build it. So that's why they were paying very high salary to people like my father.
Yeah, it's funny. I've heard similar stories from Scotland, actually, that in the 70s that quite a few guys were thinking of going over there because the wages were so good at the time. Okay, and then Soaker City says, keeping kids safe from wokery is about as simple as the Pirate Bay and a hard disk drive. It's easy. I've done it. You can mass download old Disney, 80s, etc. It's actually fun. Otherwise, just be mindful of what they're seeing on YouTube. It's really not hard. You want to show them what you want to anyway. Yes, I can understand that. And then finally, Stephen says, I heard that black Barbies are only 11% of dolls, but make up 55% of Barbie crime. Do you know if there's any truth to that? I don't think they keep doll crime statistics by race. I think this is just a dreadful right-wing fear-mongering lie, don't you think, Jeff?
Yes, I think the problem with these statistics is that it doesn't tell me the story of the black Barbie and what led her to her current circumstances.
Well, and also what is race anyway? All right. Okay, well, I think that's all the super chats, and it's gone longer than I was expecting to. So thank you, JF, for staying to answer all of those. Okay. I guess that's it. I'll be back in about 15 minutes with Semi Ogog. In the meantime, thank you, everyone. And okay, yes. Thank you, JF, for appearing on Millennial 2023.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. T-shirts and mugs and other wondrous gifts are available at the merchandise store. Impress your family, friends, colleagues, and business partners with these incredible items.
All aboard.
Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word. We'll be right back.